We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This thing on?
See, now I'm getting mad.
Because it's getting ready to be on.
I want my whiskey to bite me a little bit. This is the kind of psychopath that I hang out with. I got beat up outside of a Denny's.
The Rockpile Report. With Buffalo Bills season ticket holder, Drew Geer.
He likes to get in the ex's nose. Something I can't do with this podcast because I drink too much.
Chris Kruger.
My rollerblading, blonde mohawk producer.
The pettiest, hardest drinking Bills podcast.
I'm an adult. I know what I'm about.
Everybody, to another edition of the Rockpile Report podcast. I am your host, Bills season ticket holder Drew Geer. That's my producer, Chris Kruger, and we are here talking about the AFC divisional round, the Buffalo Bills versus the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, you know, a lot of people are looking at this game as it is the AFC title game because
How does it not feel that way?
I think the winner of this game is going to the Super Bowl. Because I think whoever wins this game is playing Cincinnati.
I heard a reference on a comedy podcast on the drive over here tonight, Chris, about they call it cow tipping. That's the term that I
can't believe you've never been cow tipping before, man.
Well, the term was meant to describe what it is when you pull someone's pants down and then someone else gets behind them and you shove them over their back. I think that was called the schoolboy in wrestling.
Yep.
Okay. It's when you do it right after you've pantsed them. And this comedian referred to it as cow tipping, and I've been laughing about it for hours. I firmly believe that whoever wins this football game is going to cow tip whoever they play next. That's what's at stake. Do you think I'm being hyperbolic when I say that?
No. Because I think the winner of Sunday night's game is playing Cincinnati.
Well, let's run this thing down. The time, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard, which I think is weird. It's like Super Bowl time.
We'll kick off at 6:40.
6:40?
6:50 is a Super Bowl.
Ah, okay. All right. We're getting close. The place, Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, Missouri. The weather. Chris, it's going to be warm. It's going to be in the mid-40s with no wind and no precipitation.
So it's going to be an offensive slaughter fest.
Is that not the perfect storm for just an offensive eruption from both of these teams? I mean, I'm pitching a half stack just thinking about it. The line, the Bills are only 2.5-point underdogs. What does that tell you as our resident gambler?
Well, 3 is home field advantage, so it's real. This is really a coin flip game.
Really?
Yeah. So you generally get 3 for being minus 3 for being a home team. So it's really half a point.
Jesus. And then when you look at the crew, it's going to be referee John Hussey. Hussey finished 16th out of 17 crews this season in total penalties called. And that's great, right, on its face? Because you say, okay, we're getting a ref that's just going to let the boys play.
Yeah, you don't want somebody like Bill Vinovich.
Well, Bill Vinovich.
Or that dude that called the Raider-Bengal game.
They said Jerome Bakker was out.
Yeah, you're done.
Bell was like, no, you're done.
You're done for this season.
You're done. You embarrassed us enough. You're done. Here's the problem with John Hussey, at least as I see it on his face. There's two ways to go on this. The Chiefs are 5-2 with him as their referee. That's not exactly promising, is it?
Yeah.
The Bills are 3-5 in games refereed by John Hussey. But in a game where you're looking, because Chris, if the dynamic here is that, hey, he doesn't call penalties, the Chiefs' defenses over the last few years, we saw it last year firsthand in the AFC title game. They manhandled us. They cheap shot us to death. They put it on us, right?
Yeah.
Our defense has been playing some really physical football. So whereas a lot of people want to talk about how that's a detriment to us, that like, oh, they're going to, this guy's not going to throw any flags when they try to hold and grab and clutch and do all these things. What do you think we're going to do? I'd argue, I think our defensive secondary is probably more poised to take advantage of that than theirs. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Who's on the call, Chris?
Not good. Jim Nantz, Tony Romo.
We got no that. Chris Collinsworth.
No, we're on CBS, woo! So we have their A crew.
You have no idea how happy that makes me. Well, I had to listen to one more Chris Collinsworth, Patrick Mahomes game.
Yeah, I think they do have this.
Josh Allen throws a touchdown. Chris Collinsworth. Well, you know that Patrick Mahomes, you know, he probably could have thrown the same pass if he was on that team wearing that jersey. And you know what he would have done was he would have said, "I'd like to see him, Chris." I'd like to see him in one of those rollover accidents where the car just like no one dies. He's just stuck there for a really, really long time.
Yeah.
Like 3 weeks until the NFL football season's over.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Romo and Nantz.
Oh, God. When you take a look at what this game is, Chris, there's something that I can't get away from. I can't get it out of my head because it's funny. Before the 2021 season kicked off, there were two teams slated as favorites to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. The Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs. Overwhelming favorites. And it makes me laugh when you look back over the various narratives and the media and the punditry that's gone on over the last 4 months. We as fans kind of, what do? We tend to analyze things in the moment and then try to take what we saw and extrapolate that out into future performances. And yet at every single turn this season, when the media has gotten a chance to talk to the coaching staff and talk to the Bills, whether it was after a win or a loss, the message was pretty much the same coming out of Sean McDermott, out of Josh Allen, out of every, after a win, they'd say, look, I'm just trying to be the best. Josh Allen said it after the Jets win. He goes, we're just trying to be the best team on the field this Sunday. It doesn't matter what's going to happen before, what's going to happen down the road. It doesn't matter what happened before. We just needed to be the best team on the field today, and we did it. And that's all I can, that's all I'm going to think about. Sean McDermott's echoed that sentiment, that it's a one week at a time season. Brian Daboll has said that. And we, being the fans that we are and doing what we do here, we can't live in that world, can we, Chris?
No.
No, we have to try to pick this stuff apart and extrapolate the data and look for trends. And it gives us something to talk about because we're not the ones on the field. We need to be able to have something to wrap our heads around to explain what we saw, explain the things that upset us, just explain the things that made us happy and hopes that they'd either stop happening or continue happening. And I think that that's the downfall of all this, because when you look back at it, some of this stuff that we've talked about, maybe even bloviated about over the last 4 months since the season started, you lost all sense of nuance. I mean, when Kansas City was going through their offensive struggles at the beginning of the season, when they almost got shut out in Tennessee, right?
Yep.
And just the defensive discombobulation, the Bills torching them in week 5, and in the lead up to that game, even their star players like Tyrann Mathieu were going, there's just no communication here. We're not communicating. There's broken plays happening all over the place. We don't know what the hell's going on. And the Bills hitting a mid-season slump that saw Buffalo fail to string together consecutive wins over an 8-week span. Both, I feel like everybody at that point wanted to throw dirt on the fact that Buffalo was going to be the team, that Kansas City was going to be the team. Every week, people were looking for a new team to call the best in the AFC. The Ravens spent some time in that conversation. Where are they now?
Well, they got riddled with injuries.
Where are you now?
Not in the playoffs.
I'll tell you what. How? Look at the three Pro Bowl quarterbacks for the AFC. Where are they now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert. Didn't make the show.
Well, Herbert might have to do with what Brandon Staley tried to do on fourth down too many times during the season.
Hey.
Heavy analytics.
Everybody was looking, whether it was the Patriots. They're like, okay, see, the Patriots are going to win the AFC East, and that's it. The Bills are done. This is over. Everybody was constantly looking for a new it team. And so it's hilarious to me that as the dust settles on the NFC season and NFL season, and we're starting to really look at this in totality, and the contenders are starting to separate themselves from pretenders, the Bills and the Chiefs are set to play each other again in what feels like the de facto AFC championship game amidst the respective reemergences as two of the most dominant presences in the NFL. It's like a real-life version of that astronaut meme where the guy's looking at the Earth and going, oh my God, it is flat. And the guy, the astronaut behind him, pulls a gun on him and he goes, it always has been. Everyone's going, oh my God, I can't believe Kansas City and Buffalo are the two hottest teams in the postseason and they're about to play each other. They were always going to be. That's it. That's what it feels like.
Destiny.
It was always going to be this, even if half the NFL spent 18 weeks trying to conjure up all the reasons that it wouldn't be. And so it's with that that we kind of dive into this conversation about what this game is going to be.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
And here to help us run down the biggest game of our entire season is EJ Snyder from the Bootleg Football Podcast. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back, guys. I'm chuckling because it seemed like all weekend all the announcers could say is, this is the biggest play of the season. And they said it for like entire quarters. And so I hear it now and it just makes me giggle.
It's a hell of a thing. Guys, for those of you who don't know, if you've been living under a rock, EJ is the elder statesman of the Bootleg Football Podcast, but you guys make great foils for one another. I love your relationship with Brett and how this has developed and how the podcast has gone. Chris has made an appointment listening each and every week. It's one of his shows.
Every Saturday, part of my podcast playlist at work.
We
I listen to all 2-3 hours.
So, guys, if you love the game,
that's a commitment.
If you love the game of football, then you're going to love this podcast because they cover everything and anything. And they talk about, it's not beholden to a single football team. It's just about the games, about what they see, about trends. And that's why I felt like he was the best one to bring on for this. And it was kind of, we'll get right into it after what we're kind of talking about, what we were joking about off air. I can't find a Kansas City podcaster who I actually appreciate enough to invite on the show. We did it once. And I was like, never again. No, we're not doing this. Because there was a level of arrogance there that I didn't realize would exist for a team that only became good 3 years ago. What are you talking about? Where did this hubris come from? Now, you've experienced some of that in your career, correct?
It's true. I have with a little team from up the road from the team that I follow, the Chicago Bears. But just if we want to break that streak, I got a guy. I got somebody that could talk to you, but where the hubris came from is Patrick Mahomes. Like, Patrick Mahomes changed everything for Kansas City Chiefs fans. And when you have a guy like that on your team, leading your team on the field, you never feel like you're out of it. You feel like you can beat anybody. Really wrong, but it is. You're right. It is relatively instant. In about 3 years, they went from, hey, we're a normal football team, to, oh, we got this. We're down by 21 in the fourth quarter. No problem.
But the worst part is they were a group of likable also-rans that I genuinely enjoyed because I like Andy Reid. And then next thing I know, they've become this insufferable group with a quarterback that who's otherworldly talented, whose brother is a sideshow clown, like Sideshow Bob-esque. It's just like everything that follows around him, that orbits around him, is a giant distraction. The guy himself seems like a great dude, but he brings this attitude to his fan base. His own family creates a whole other narrative of nonsense. And yet he is one of the most omnipotent forces in the NFL right now. Patrick Mahomes has been kind of the standard for young gunslinger quarterback who's going to take chances, show off a little arm arrogance, who's going to make explosive plays down the field through the air. And then Josh Allen kind of comes along in that same mold, like a smaller version of that. And so in that way, it's put these two teams on this repeat collision course where they keep running into each other, kind of the way Brady and Manning did over the years. It's like if these two guys are good enough that they're going to keep running into each other like this. Last time things cut our way, but there's no guarantee that that'll fold over into this game. And so that's kind of what I want to talk to you about. Now, first of all, just in terms of philosophy behind this, I just feel like there's a lot more at stake for the Bills from a legacy standpoint than there is for the Chiefs. Would you agree with that in terms of the Andy Reid coaching tree and everything that they've
certainly bookmarked more success more recently than the Bills have, for sure. So in terms of more riding on it in that perspective or from that perspective, yeah, I would say that's true. It's weighted to the Bills' sideline there. However, what you mentioned about these teams riding these two young quarterbacks to this collision course, it is a clash of the Titans, and I love it. I love the fact that we're going to continue to see this because it is, as a football fan, as a guy that spends a lot of time watching football, I want to see the best play the best all the time. I don't care if it's in college or in the pros. I want to see healthy teams go at it with good schemes, no excuses, and see how it plays out. And that's what we're going to get with Kansas City and Buffalo for as long as Pat and Josh are helming those franchises, because they are true difference makers. Top five quarterbacks in the NFL, maybe top. No, I'd say top five, because that list rotates on a weekly basis. There's always guys you can throw in. But guys that can win a game, I don't want to say by themselves because it's still a team sport, but who can turn a game by themselves for the foreseeable future. So that's great just as a football fan. In terms of weight and what Reed and all of his coaching tree and now Kansas City by extension has accomplished because of that, yeah, they're a little bit more been there, done that. I don't expect them to be nervous in this position at all. But the Bills have done enough of that, I think, in the last couple of years that they're not just happy to be here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're clearly focused on winning this game.
No, and I think that it's almost, there's almost a Rocky quality to it where it's like they've suffered last year to get to this point. To be the team they are now, playing the level of defense they're playing, with their skill players as tough as they are, you almost had to suffer what we did in the championship game last, because without that, you don't get here, right? That kind of mental toughness to come back from that. I almost feel like this team wouldn't be what it is now if we didn't have that game. But it's funny that we're here because it seemed early on in the season like we weren't going to get there. And that's kind of the first thing I want to pick your brain about is somebody who I know watches film and breaks things down. Both of these teams had struggles. Now, Bills fans know all about ours, but people who haven't been focusing on the Chiefs all year might not realize this. The Chiefs were a 3-4 football team. They had a losing record in the first month and a half of football, and a lot of it was riding this offensive stagnation. And they had a lot of turnover, right? They had a young offensive line. They lost a lot of size at their skill-making positions, and I feel like that impacted the downfield passing game that they wanted to employ, and I think that a lot of things that they've kind of ridden to success over Patrick Mahomes' ascension kind of fell by the wayside. Are those fair things for me to say?
All of them are, including the fact that it is really interesting that the two teams had sort of mirrored struggles through the early part of the season. Neither one of them looked like a juggernaut consistently. They had their, they both had their games, but KC, you know, 6 weeks in, 7 weeks in, was a team that people had serious questions about. Chiefs fans were in the middle of some prolonged hand-wringing and saying, what happened? We had it and we lost it. They didn't look polished. And it was a lot of things coming together. One was the defense not supporting the offense. The defense was horrendous. It was an open door. And so Pat felt that he had to push early on. And he wasn't getting contributions from the supporting cast. There was still Tyreek Hill, and there's still Kelce, as always. But he was forcing. He was running out of clean pockets. He was not throwing the ball particularly well. I mused openly that he might be a little bit injured. It's pretty typical that NFL players won't make an injury public because then guys will tee off on it. But he didn't look like himself through that first 6 weeks. And then, as you suggested, things began to change.
The turning point for me was that Tennessee game where you saw them almost get shut out. And the play that I can't get out of my head when I was like, oh no, Patrick Mahomes is trying to win. It was a play where nothing was going well. I want to say it was shortly before halftime or just after halftime. They come out, nothing's working. And Patrick Mahomes takes off. And it's not his usual, okay, I'm going to run for the marker, get the first down, step out of bounds, avoid contact, and just we go on to the next series. He's running down the hashes. And then after 25 yards, tries to cut to the sideline. And I'm watching the way he's running, and I go, oh, no, he's not comfortable with this. Like, he's doing something wildly outside of his – and he gets the ball. He gets hit, and the ball gets punched out of his hands, and it's a fumble. And I go, there it is right there. He's trying to move this mountain by himself. And that's why this team is struggling. It's not, I don't know what was said. I know there were reports of a really explosive team meeting after that game, but that's when they started their winning streak. And they're, right now they've had one loss since that Tennessee game. It's pretty impressive stuff. And in there's some mixed things, right? One of the things that I found, like looking over the numbers and looking over things, is the rebirth of this vertical passing attack. They used to thrive on challenging teams downfield. Tyreek Hill was a monster. Like, if you play fantasy football and you're at home, he was winning people their fantasy leagues because his yards after the catch and just air yardage were huge. It was ridiculous. And then somehow that fell by the wayside to start this season. They were more horizontal in terms of how they were designed. And some of I said, okay, well, they lost Sammy Watkins. They lost some of their depth at tight end. They lost some other things. So now they've got these small, fast, but undersized guys, and they're trying to spread the ball horizontally instead of vertically. And it's not working. It's not going well. Against the Steelers, here's the stat from Next Gen Stats. Patrick Mahomes threw 2 touchdown passes targeting vertical routes, go, corner, post, and wheel for the first time since week 12 of 2020. That's crazy. He was 4 of 5, 111 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's on something that all season hadn't materialized. And yet now all of a sudden it's clicking for him. What do you think drives that? I mean, is it just him getting more comfortable? Is it the rest of the offense? Because we know he's great. Is it just everybody else acclimating around him?
No, it's not. And he wasn't great. We talked about that for the first 7 weeks. He did not. About that play, and it's not one play, but it's a type of play that the NFL in general, I'll just lump them all in together, couldn't handle. Nobody could handle Tyreek on the crosser. And teams finally said, we need to shut down Tyreek on the crosser. Like, above all else, we need to shut down Tyreek on the crosser. Well, then Pat was good enough in previous seasons to distribute it to all the other weapons. And the Chiefs had run the ball a little bit before their offensive line struggles that they suffered in the Super Bowl. And that was it. That, you know, people would say, great, go ahead, take the crosser. Nobody had it figured out. And then everybody said, great, we're going to play 2 high shells and we're going to force them to go down. We're not going to allow the streaked Tyreek. Like, that is, we cannot allow that to happen because that'll kill us instantly and we'd rather die a slow death. Mm-hmm. Well, now the Chiefs early in the season couldn't complete the slow death. right? Their supporting cast was not contributing. Guys like Mecole Hardman, Byron Pringle, certainly Jerick McKinnon. Those are not names you heard. Kelce was still there, and he was doing his heroic thing, but they were shutting down Tyreek with too high, and Pat wasn't hitting it. He was leaving the pocket. He was making errant throws. He wasn't on time. It was all when they started to show patience, right? They said, great, you're going to play the two high shell. We're going to go back to these guys. And those guys stepped up and started making plays. So they didn't need the streak to Tyreek anymore. Whereas in the beginning of the season, they'd get behind a little bit. The defense would collapse, allow a lot of points. And they're like, now we need it. And so now Patrick's running around like a madman, trying to get it all back in one play. And they're running, you know, guy over the top, guy underneath, bracketing Tyreek and going, go for it. You know, you're not going to hit it. And if you do, we're going to tackle him. He's not going to go for another 50 yards. And they just thing kind of shut down when they got Melvin Ingram from the Steelers for a song. They move Chris Jones back inside where he's an absolute wrecker. The pass rush starts to come back. Suddenly the secondary looks a whole lot better and they start limiting what other teams can do. And now the Chiefs, Brett and I were just talking about this. The Chiefs are a team seemingly fueled by fun. Like when they're having fun and can chuck it, they're loose and they'll try anything. And it usually works for them. When they weren't having fun through the first 6-7 weeks of the season, it was contagious. That they weren't able. It was like a car that just won't start. Suddenly the defense gives them a little bit of cushion. They relax, a little bit of pressure comes off them, and they start flinging it. The other guys start making plays underneath when they cap that long route to Tyreek, and we're back to Chiefs football.
So when you look at the Buffalo Bills and how we match up against this defense, because I'm convinced that they're not, I mean, I've pored over the statistics, I've looked at this stuff, I still don't see where this defense is good. Right? Like, because I see the games, they play well. And when I say good, let me qualify that. They're talented in some very concentrated areas. Their defensive line is maybe one of the best in the AFC. Right now, they're playing some of the best football of any defensive line in the AFC. Their secondary is still the same secondary, though, that they've kind of been. They're just benefiting from the improved play in front of them. When I look at guys, because what I do is I look over all the games and I say, okay, they've been on this winning streak. That one loss comes to the Bengals. And I go back and I look at that game and I go, oh, they picked on your best secondary players. Charvarius Ward had a terrible game. Legarius Sneed had a terrible game. How? Well, you look at who they were matched up against and where those completions came from. And then I look at our skill players and I say, you know what? We don't have a Jamar Chase. But what we do have is we've got a Stephon Diggs, and we've got a Gabe Davis, and we've got a kind of surging Isaiah McKenzie down the stretch, who now all of a sudden Dable's gone into his bag of tricks and pulled out orbit routes that everyone's like, wait a minute, what? Orbit motion on – where's that been for 18 weeks? Yeah, we were saving it for this time of year apparently. But you see the effect it had against New England, and that was – I want to say their cornerbacks are much more assignment sound than the guys individually in Kansas City. I think Kansas City's defense is good when they play as a unit and they're cohesive, when the defensive performance can fuel the secondary. But if you can buy Josh Allen time, and Josh Allen might be, maybe he's the kryptonite to that, because he was the most pressured quarterback in the NFL this year, 27th in sacks. Because his elusiveness allows him to extend plays, navigate dirty pockets, to just get out and make things happen. This secondary doesn't seem set up to thrive in those kind of games. And so in that way, when you look at that aspect of this matchup, how do you feel about the Bills' offense attacking the secondary?
It does start, I don't want to say start and end, but it starts and thrives with Josh. And if Josh ascends to that Patriots where he looked like he was playing playground football against a professional team, because he is just that good, and when he is feeling it and he is calm and he is moving to secondary targets and making just inane throws that no defense, quite frankly, across the NFL is ready for, it won't really matter who's in the secondary and the other jerseys. If he is playing that level of football, it's a lot like Pat, right? If he's going right, going left, you know, deep opposite out in a bucket, like no secondary is prepared to cover that. If Josh is playing like that, I think the Bills match up extremely well because nobody can cover that. And you mentioned his elusiveness. It's size, it's speed, it's the ability to see that and then do something that he quote unquote shouldn't, that he can, that really sort of breaks defenses. The defenses say, hey, we did everything right, and still, you know, we had him on the run, we'd covered well for 3.5 seconds, and he still hit a guy, you know, again, just coming back to help his quarterback, and they picked up another first down, and now we're rolling again. Now we got a fresh set of downs. That's demoralizing stuff over the course of a game. And if Josh can play at that level, they're going to get into Casey's head.
And that's where football stops being fun all the time, when you get punched in the mouth. That's what you saw Sunday night on a rainy Sunday in October in Kansas City, Missouri. That's what you saw, was the Buffalo Bills came out and made life hard. And the Chiefs did not react well to that adversity. And everyone kept saying, okay, here it comes. Here's the drive where the Chiefs will take over. Here's the drive. Here's the drive. And it never came. At no point did they ever reassume control of that football game. And in that way, I look at this and I say to myself, okay, I'd like to think it's almost like the prodigal son returning. We've gone on this journey this season where I think we peaked at that Kansas City game and then fell into this valley. Just back and forth losses where you get decimated by the Colts. You lose to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who own a top 3 pick in the NFL. You lost to them without scoring 10 points. And everyone goes, well, the Bills can't be good because you lost this game. And now we're back here again. And you say you've survived the valley and now you're back on top, off of one of the most prolific offensive performances in NFL history. If anybody's feeling themselves after this, it's got to be the Bills. And one of these teams has shown that, like, and I think that's the interesting thing about this matchup, because as much as I want to say the Bills have had just as much adversity, they've both faced it. Both teams had their constitution questioned this season, and now they're going to, come together and do it again as two of the hottest teams in football. How wild is that as an outsider?
It's really crazy, because normally the journeys are not that similar, especially not in the same season, maybe over the course of several seasons, especially teams that play each other, you know, in their own divisions. Like, but these are two teams that have very similar figures as quarterbacks, suffered very similar struggles within the same seasons, roughly within the same time period. It's not like one started hot and then tailed off and the other one was terrible for 6 or 8 weeks and then got really hot. Like, it was similar. The Bills started a little bit hotter, but, you know, going back to that October, a stake in it, because that was the other Chiefs. That was the Chiefs that couldn't shoot straight.
Yep.
And they've figured it out. And it is amazing. Like, that turnaround, Spagnuolo's turnaround with that defense, from the way they looked in weeks, you know, 1 through 7, to the way they've performed. If you look at all of their statistics, any of their statistics, it goes, you know, either it was terrible and that's a really high number, like yards allowed or points scored, and then it just goes down. And in half of the season, they figured it out. Like, as a team, both on offense and defense, roughly at the same time, and have held it at that level all the way through. And that's why they made the playoffs. That's why they're a team that is, you know, should be feared. So looking back, and I know a lot of Bills fans will probably do that and go, oh, yeah, in October we rolled these guys. It's straight up. We're doing this. And the answer is, don't make that mistake. It's not going to be quite that easy. Both of these teams can take a punch, and they both makes – well, if anything, that makes this a game that I would stay far away from with my money if I was a sports bettor, because there is no telling how either of these teams can go off.
EJ, I'm sure for those of you who don't have any emotional attachment to this matchup, it's going to be a ton of fun. I can't wait to hear you and Brett. I can't wait for you and Brett to analyze the hell out of this thing when the Bills inevitably win it. over on the Bootleg Football Podcast. Why don't you tell all of our listeners where they can go to tune into the inevitable Bills victory tour over at the Bootleg and where they can find you on social?
Yeah, absolutely. So Bootleg Football Podcast is on YouTube and the new Bootleg Football Clips channel, which is shorter versions and selected bits, just launched a couple of weeks ago, also can be found on YouTube. On socials, it's primarily Twitter for me. I realize I should expand into TikTok and other things.
Don't do it.
Just don't have the time.
Don't do it.
Don't. On Twitter, at the Draftsman FB. For now. So those are the two places you can catch up with us there. And then, you know, we're starting into draft season and we both do quite a bit of draft work. So it'll be that way throughout draft season.
EJ Snyder, he's on Twitter at the Draftsman FB, part of the Bootleg Football Podcast with our friend Brett Coleman. Also does the Chicago Bears podcast, Bears Over Beers.
And that brings us... Chris, I got to open a fresh beer for this because it's disappointing that this might be one of the last times I get to do this season. It brings us to our keys to victory.
Wow, that's a lot of keys. Bigger the keychain, more powerful the man.
For the Buffalo Bills to compete in this one and come out with a win, they're going to need to do a handful of things. First of all, the Bills' safeties are going to need to be all pros. They're going to have to earn those all-pro labels that they, I mean, Chris, they already have. But you're going to have to show it here in this game because the regular season accolades don't mean anything if you don't make it matter in the postseason, right?
Yeah, it feels like they're going to need to help out Levi and Dane a lot here.
They absolutely made their presence felt in the first game this year. They absolutely made their presence felt last week against the New England Patriots. To my earlier point about how the Chiefs have fared against two high safety looks, the Bills are going to have to try to rekindle some of the magic of that early season win against the Chiefs. Early on in the year, when the Chiefs offense was struggling, like we talked about, Mahomes was, he was averaging 0.1 EPA per play against two high safety looks. Isn't that something we've talked about here all season about things that bothered Josh Allen?
Yes.
Okay. So to make that make sense for you at home as to why that's a problem, Patrick Mahomes entering 2021's career average against two high safety looks was 0.22, indicating that he was being half as efficient as he used to be against the same formations. I'd argue a lot of that has to do with losing size at wide receiver, like we talked about with EJ, but what do I know? What do any of us know at this point, Chris? It's all just whataboutism, right?
Yeah.
We're all just hacks out here trying to find something to talk about. What I do know is that they absolutely shredded the Steelers when the Steelers tried to pull those two high safety looks. Now, the Steelers have Minkah Fitzpatrick. They've got some Tremaine Edmonds' brother. They've got some pretty decent safety play. I wouldn't say great, but decent, right? The worst part is knowing that it's a formula that we're familiar with. Because our success against those same looks is why we're here in this game against the Kansas City Chiefs. Our offense did the same thing that theirs did, which is they became more patient. They started dinking and dunking, taking what was given to them on the shallow crossers and on running back passes. And that would bait defenses out of those looks. And when our team learned how to do that, it really hit its stride. Because teams said, okay, fine, this is how they're going to play ball. We have to come down in the box. You think back to that New England, the win we had in Foxborough. The first half was passes to Singletary, screen passes to Isaiah McKenzie, short passes to Isaiah McKenzie. The second that they dropped their guard in the second half, 30-yard touchdown passes to Stephon Diggs, right up the seam, right in their face. Why? Because you brought your safeties down, and that's a terrible idea. The Chiefs are doing the same things that the Bills did to get themselves here. They're doing it too. So the difference is going to have to be that we have a safety tandem that's capable of doing something about it. And I don't know. You're just going to... They're going to have to pressure Mahomes to get impatient and to try us deep, where no one has succeeded this year. I saw the statistic this past week before the Patriots game, Chris. Deep passes of more than 20 air yards. The Bills were number one in the NFL at 167. The second closest team was the LA Chargers. I almost said San Diego. Caught myself.
San Diego. Superchargers.
San Diego. They were second with over 480. That means we're 320 yards better through the air than anybody else for the rest of the season because our safeties are great. This is the game where they need to flex that. They have to flex their muscles in that regard because that's going to be our saving grace if there is one. If there's one to be had, that's going to be it. That our deep passing defense can keep them honest, but that we can frustrate them when they do try to hit those shallow crossers because our safeties can do what they do, which is come down and be disruptive routinely. If you're going to shy, because they love to run crossers to Hill. They love bringing Byron Pringle on these little stop and go routes and these curls. And they just try to get the ball in his hands because he's a small guy. But it's effective and it's gotten him here. Our safeties are going to have to provide support in that way. And it's a dice roll as to whether they're up to it. But I can't wait to see. If they're going to have any chance, it's going to be because our offense carries its own share of the load. Last year in the AFC Championship game where we lost, it took us forever to score. Well, I mean, I think they scored 14 before we kicked a field goal.
Something like that.
It might have even been 17. Maybe it was 21. Who knows? It felt like a million. The offense has to also do its part to light a fire under Patrick Mahomes and push that sense of urgency. Because the records show that teams that do that fare pretty well against this Kansas City Chiefs team. And we were talking with EJ earlier about all the one-score games that we're involved in. I mean, you're talking about games against the New York Jets. The New York Giants. The Aaron Rodgers-less Green Bay Packers. You go down the list, the Cowboys, the Chargers, the Bengals, the Broncos. The Broncos, who didn't even make the playoffs, you were in a one-score game with. The reason for that is because those teams scored early. Teams that they ran away from, the Raiders and all these other teams that they just embarrassed over, they were either tied or trailing, leaving the first quarter. And that's the only reason that the game stayed close, because the opposing offense was putting pressure on their offense to perform while also doing the things with their secondary they needed to. Now, I can't imagine, Chris, out of all the things that aren't sustainable, I feel like this offense wouldn't just go from the performance we saw against the Patriots, who were the number two defense in the playoffs, compared to, like, they were right behind us.
Yep.
As the best defenses in this postseason. I don't think that just shrivels and dies on the vine, does it?
No, but, you know, it's going to be hard to replicate what you did against the Patriots. You hope that the Bills didn't peak in this kind of run that they've been on.
See, I don't think so, though. Because I think, the final key to victory. Brian Daboll, you want to be an NFL head coach? You want to put out some film that just makes everybody believe that you walk on water, that you can have Josh Allen's good, but you can also have your Wyatt Earp crossing the river moment. It's going to be this football game, and it's going to be by finding a way against a much worse secondary. A much worse secondary than the Patriots can field. I mean, I know they were missing Jalen Mills, so that kind of conflates things, but you need to be able to attack them with the same kind of creativity and speed options that you attack the Patriots with, because it kept them off balance. Like we talked about in a recap, it kept them off balance all night. He would parlay guys like Diggs and guys like Davis and say, okay, fine. You want to cover him? Here's Knox. Okay. You're going to pay attention to him, and I'm going to send Davis with his size through your linebacker core and into your safety depth, and you're going to turn your eyes to those two guys because you don't want Josh Allen beating you deep. Great. Here's Isaiah McKenzie. Here's Isaiah McKenzie in space. Good luck. Here's a Dawson Knox, and he's going to disrespectfully stiff arm one of your defenders because he's bigger and stronger than they are. That's how you win this game. You have to go out there and show a little bit of arrogance on offense. Your offense has to put on the most creative performance, because Spagnuolo is going to, he's one of the better defensive coordinators in the NFL. He's going to have a game plan. The last time around, it was to play physical. And I think this year we kind of showed that teams that do that, as long as our trenches hold up, it's harder this year to play physical with our skill players than it was last year. And I almost credit the Chiefs. It's almost like a Rocky moment where I thank the Chiefs for making the Bills as physically tough as they are now, because without it, they might not have gotten that kick in the teeth and decided, you know what I need to do? I need to go train in the mountains and I need to lift rocks and run. Chris, what are all the Rocky Mountain? What are some of the wonky workouts Rocky had in those movies?
Running up the steps in Philadelphia. That's getting cardio done that way.
I'm thinking back to the Rocky IV where he's doing tricep workouts with a bag of rocks. It's like, what the hell are you doing? Just French curls, dude. French curls, that's easy enough. But it's because of the Chiefs that we're here talking about this, because our team knew it had to get tougher. They knew they had to get nastier, and our skill players have evolved to a point where they're playing better against physicality now. They need to go out there, though, and prove that they can do it against a team that's coached by that guy. Because Tyrann Mathieu is not going to be a slouch. And at the same time, when I go back to their last big loss against the last truly explosive offense they played, because let's face it, the Steelers, Chris, true or false, Steelers are a pumpkin on offense. The clock struck midnight on that Cinderella. I look back at that Bengals game, and I see that some of their biggest names in the secondary, Rashad Fenton, Legarius Sneed, Tyrann Mathieu, Dan Sorensen, Charvarius Ward, these guys had awful games. Awful games. I'm talking about 104 yards against the guy who was Charvarius Ward, who was supposed to be your number one cornerback. Legarius Sneed, who's supposed to be your inside guy. 9 targets, 8 receptions allowed for 82 yards, and he gave up a ton of first downs. They worked him in the slot. We are the team that's built to take advantage of the flaws of this secondary. Okay, their linebacker core is not great. We showed that in the first matchup. And while they play well against teams that don't have an array of weapons, we do. I don't know if our wide receivers are, I won't say, I mean, because Ja'Marr Chase has put on an electric season. But I'll say that our playmakers are just as talented as Cincy's when you take them in their totality. And in that way, I look at what this Chiefs team is on defense. And even during this late season surge that they put on to get themselves into the 2 seed, they still lost to this football team because that Cincinnati offense chewed their ass. Cincinnati does not have our defense. I think that's their Achilles heel in this entire playoffs. I think they're close. I don't think they're great. So the fact that they were able to eke out a win over this team with our defense playing the way it is right now, you maintain your defensive composure, your safeties play good football, and you get creative. The most creative you'll probably be ever if you're Brian Daboll, because there is no tomorrow. You give me an attack that hits all 3 levels the way you did last week. I want to see mixes of the orbit concepts with McKenzie that have been missing all season long. Go deep into your bag of tricks. Figure it out. Find a way to put these defenders into positions where they have to make hard choices and then punch them in the mouth. And do it again and do it again. And then, oh, by the way, our quarterback, he's going to run through your linebacker core. Why? Because that's what he does. You do that and you'll mitigate the power of their defensive line, because that's the backbone of their entire team this season. And if you can do that, if you can spread them thin, take advantage of these poor matchups that they've got in the secondary against our skilled talent players, you're going to walk away from this with a better than puncher's chance to win this thing. I really think that's the difference. I hate saying it because, Chris, how long have I spent talking shit about Brian Daboll?
You've been doing that all season.
Yes. And yet here we are in this moment. He's the guy. He's the key. It's Brian Daboll. If he calls the game of his career, we're going to the AFC title game. That's it. Because I trust our defense can do a better job than theirs over 4 quarters. So Brian Daboll, go out there. Prove me wrong. Prove shit-talking Drew Gear from the Rock Pile Report podcast. Send me packing with all of my terrible takes. But get me there. Get me to the next game so that I can sit here and eat some humble pie. You do that, my hat off to you and everyone here in this. You'll find your way into a head coaching job if you can pull this thing off. Chris, I got nothing else. I don't even want to make predictions on this game other than the fact that my liver is going to be put to the test. It's crazy, Chris. Raise your glass. Hey,
Just my glass of Pepsi.
Yep. Cheers. I feel like, I genuinely feel, I know I say this sometimes, but I feel like Peter Venkman right before they cross the streams in Ghostbusters.
Yep.
I'll see you on the other side, brother. And I'll see you guys on the other side. From us here, I'm Drew Geer. That's Chris Krueger. That was EJ Snyder. And this has been your Rock Pile Report.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.